evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Friday, May 24, 2024. Some politicians in South Sudan have hijacked a union for young men and women.
I've been even receiving some call. There were those who were there like telling me I should step down. And you know, when you are telling another person to step down, and that person who is telling you to step down is not a young person, is a politician. It is an indication that that politician had already taken side. To make the matter worse, some of the young people, they are submissive to the politician.
And some residents of Juba Town accuse an electricity company of robbing them.
Sincerely speaking, we don't understand the prices of electricity lately, especially us doing small businesses at home. We are complaining a lot because of this power.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Several young men and women are blaming senior politicians for interfering into the affairs of young men and women in the country. A minister in President Kiir's office admits some politicians are involved in youth activities. For VOA News, Dennis Longonyi reports from Juba.
Many young men and women in Juba have expressed doubts about transparent elections for members of the South Sudan Youth Union. John Angeth, a representative of persons with disabilities, says his candidature was later approved after he made some noise. He says the neutrality of the union has been compromised by certain politicians.
I'd been even receiving some call. There were those who were there like telling me I should step down. And you know, when you are telling another person to step down, and that person who is telling you to step down is not a young person, is a politician. It is an indication that that politician had already taken side. To make the matter worse, some of the young people, they are submissive to the politician, and they are even funded by some of these politicians.
The seven candidates who are standing for the position of the president of the youth union are all men. Silivia Akwot, who hails from Jonglei State, says some conditions for registration set by the union eliminated female candidates.
Most of us did not participate because of financial instability, because when you look at the registration, 3 million, and some ladies, however strong they are, the kind of job they have, cannot finance them. And with our current situation here in the country, unless you have a backup.
Earlier today, Joseph Bangasi Bakasoro, minister in the office of the president, publicly urged members of the union to shun politics.
Some of you politicize the youth union. You are here, you know yourself. And when you are saying don't politicize the youth union, you said yes, it is true. But you are one of the men, the lady, who is politicizing youth union. You know yourself. Some of you bought votes already, only to come and sit and destroy it into the ballot box. That is politicizing youth union. Be fair. The youth should not take sides.
Rich Malwal, a local lawyer who has been following the union's electoral process, says democracy has been under siege.
It wasn't meeting the democratic standard. But nonetheless, we understand that the presidency intervened and said it would set a bad record if we want the general elections to be done. And hence, the elections is now allowed. And instead of 3 days of the convention, it might be probably this one day, which is so tricky because candidates are not given time to be able to campaign and meet with the delegates. We actually wanted to hear from them, and that is really necessary.
Peter Malir, an activist and the chairperson of the South Sudan Youth Organization Coalition, blames the union's officials for doing very little to exercise democracy in the country.
The convention was brought to help of unknown circumstances, and we do know that this is a national event that features the role and position of young people, which of course, for me, I see it as, you know, it was not a good gesture in the face of a transitional government, the government of national unity. We want to see them supporting the space and supporting the efforts of young people to engage and bring about nation building.
South Sudan Youth Union was established in 2011, a month after the country gained independence from Sudan. The primary aim group is to bring youth together under one umbrella so that they can collectively present their demands to the government. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Still in Juba, some residents say electricity tariffs imposed on them by the Juba Electrical Distribution Company are excessive. One resident says he is spending more money on electricity to light his house compared to last year. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Most residents of South Sudan's capital, Juba, depend on a private company for a reliable supply of electricity. Some businesses use generators due to the higher tariffs charged by the Juba Electrical Distribution Company. Juba resident Daniel Joseph says electricity tariffs have recently increased, and some families who depend on the Juba Electrical Distribution Company or JETCO for power may soon experience a blackout.
In the past, when JETCO started, I used to buy electricity for 20,000, which can take me a month, even if you have a refrigerator at home. But nowadays, 20,000 will not take you a week, and I don't understand what is really happening. First of all, JETCO has something called service fees for months, but we don't understand what the service fee is all about.
What is the service fee all about?
Joseph Thomas Laku is a public relations and marketing manager for the Juba Electrical Distribution Company. Laku says the company has not increased its electricity fees. He blames South Sudan's hyperinflation for the fluctuating market prices.
There's difference between rate and tariff. Tariff is actually something which is set and is specific, and rate is something that is always keep changing. Since we started in 2018, we have never ever change the tariff. The tariff is still the same. For domestic use or residential, it is still 0.316. It's still the tariff until today. Since we start until today, they have been changing on the rate every day and every month, every year.
But Diana John, who has an ice cream business in Juba, says she is not making any profit due to high cost of electricity.
Sincerely speaking, we don't understand the prices of electricity lately, especially us doing small businesses at home. We are complaining a lot because of this power. We can buy electricity from 10,000 South Sudanese pounds and it will only last for one day. We are tired of complaining about these issues because we are not even benefiting but huge cause, other ones that benefit.
Laku says Juba Electrical Distribution Company and its partners are exploring ways to address customer complaints.
Our Minister of Energy and Dams is a construction group. They are working on other projects like solar project to assure that those projects are integrated. With those solar projects, of course, this one we are getting it from GOT. We can at least reduce the tariffs. But now we are using thermal, you know, generation, you know, it's a lot. It's not easy.
This week, Pedro Juol, a lawmaker in the National Assembly, said the Ministry of Electricity, Dams, Irrigation and Water Resources should invest in a solar energy to provide an alternative source of energy to residents of Juba Town.
Urge the government to revisit Pula Dam to avoid the importing powers from the other countries. The government to review the already existing subsidy was JETCO direct the National Minister of Electricity to complete the commissioning of the solar power plant in the Nesitu in May to rescue the citizen from the exploitative monopoly of expensive JETCO generator power.
7.7% of South Sudan's population has access to electricity, the lowest percentage compared to neighboring countries. The rest of the population uses kerosene, sunlight, firewood and portable diesel generators for power. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias, reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Washington, where U.S. President Joe Biden lavished Kenyan President William Ruto with more than just pomp and polish on his first state visit. On Thursday, Biden announced he will make the East African nation a major non-NATO ally, the first sub-Saharan nation to receive that status. The move signals the shifting of U.S. security cooperation to East Africa as U.S. troops prepare to depart Niger. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
This is no mere handshake. This is the start of something much bigger. As President Joe Biden welcomed Kenyan President William Ruto to the White House Thursday for the first state visit by an African leader in nearly 16 years, he topped the soft power festivities, which included a lavish state dinner, with something much more concrete. Biden announced he'd recognize Kenya as a major non-NATO ally, a status that gives it privileged access to U.S. training and equipment.
That's a fulfillment of years of collaboration. Our joint counterterrorism operations have degraded ISIS and Al-Shabaab, across East Africa, our mutual support for Ukraine, and has rallied the world to stand behind the UN Charter. And our work together on Haiti is helping pave the way to reduce instability and insecurity.
And Ruto reiterated his plea that the U.S. double its commitments to help restructure African nations' debts, most of which are to the world's largest creditor, China.
Unless this is done, and done immediately, the values of freedom, democracy, and the rule of law are in great jeopardy.
Analysts say Kenya's spotty human rights record, as documented by the U.S. State Department, raises concerns about how it will use its new privileged status. Michael Walsh is a senior fellow in the Africa program at the Foreign Policy Research Institute and a visiting scholar at the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at the University of California, Berkeley.
Kenya has serious issues with things like extrajudicial killings and forced disappearances and torture and cruel and inhumane and other forms of degrading punishment by government or by or on behalf of the government. And this is by the security forces. So there's going to be concerns that that part of the strategy is being abandoned, that the U.S. is no longer putting such a priority on democracy promotion in Africa. And the U.S. is really retrenching towards the security side of the security democracy paradigm.
Ruto also ironed out a number of other agreements during his day-long deliberations in Washington and discussed Kenya's delayed plans to send 1,000 security officers to the Caribbean nation of Haiti. The initiative, toward which the U.S. has pledged $300 million, faces stiff political and legal challenges in Kenya, and has been delayed by political turmoil in Haiti. Ruto, who said he was looking forward to the deployment of forces to Haiti, did not give a date. Anita Powell, VOA News, The White House.
Journalist Ruben Chama has been speaking with people in Nairobi to hear their thoughts about President Ruto's visit to the United States. Bansi Njeri, a lecturer at Kenya Methodist University, says she hopes the visit brings several benefits, including improved pop culture ties and technology links.
Kenyans expect better relations with the U.S., especially in the visa processes, because we have been talking about how it's expensive to get a U.S. visa. We expect that Kenyans going to the U.S. will find it easier to get a visa. We also expect better economy, better IT, because we know America is the hub of technology. I saw that he also went with some celebrities, some media personalities, some comedians. We also expect the entertainment industry to be boosted and hope that the Kenyan celebrities can also get a bigger market out there. I think President Biden, as the president of the U.S., can help Kenya in terms of cybersecurity. We rely so much on internet now that we are in the technology era.
Angela, you're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, investors eye Southern Africa nuclear energy technology. Find out why after the break.
There's something we study in diplomacy whereby when the heads of state are the ones.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. We still go for more Vox Pops from the streets of Nairobi. Angela Kamwiti, a student of International Relations Studies at the University of Nairobi, says she hopes the visit leads to more student exchange opportunities with the United States.
Personally, I'd look at it like I'd want more cultural and social exchange programs, even for students. The university itself has also established a center for the studies of the United States. So hopefully with that, and also like engaging with other universities, they can bring up exchange programs whereby we can go there, learn how they do their things, adapt and come back, and they can also learn from us. So hopefully when he comes back, more centers in other universities and this one as well can be taken up so we can get to exchange and interact with them without many issues such as visas.
Second year student Cynthia Wanjiru, who is studying international studies at the University of Nairobi, says she hopes the trip creates new economic opportunities, especially for the young.
There's something we study in diplomacy whereby when the heads of state are the ones which are meeting, it's easier for them to agree, easier for them to make decisions without much of a hassle. They're the ones who are in charge of their country. So I would want for him to not only interact with the American president and people, but also to bring up job opportunities for the young people, investment opportunities here in Kenya, seeing that we've been going through some financial crisis here and there, that we can get more investment coming into the country, being able to export not only goods, but also our services as well.
Liberian national Emmanuel Trokonbani, who is studying international relations in Nairobi, thinks the visit will not benefit Africans.
I don't know what benefit actually would that his visit bring to Africa at large, because I think African leaders must hold hands together. African leaders must build an alliance. They must build solidarity to strengthen the Africa, the union, so that anything that's supposed to benefit Africa must be discussed among our African leaders. But the West always want to control our leaders. They always want to control our resources in Africa. They always want to control our politics, our governance system in Africa. So inviting President Ruto or inviting an African leader to the United States is a channel for which they want to use whenever they want to say something or what they want to do for their goals or their interests to be achieved in Africa.
You can find all news about President Ruto's visit to the United States on voaafrica.com.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. International investors have been lining up for South African nuclear energy technology this year. Two partnerships have been announced aimed at financing the manufacture of a new prototype small-scale reactor developed in South Africa. One partner includes a collective of family farmers whose businesses are suffering from the country's unreliable power grid. Maurice de Klerk reports from South Africa's capital, Pretoria.
South Africa's 17-year-long energy shortage makes farmers spend millions supplementing the unreliable national electricity grid with mainly solar power systems or generators running on imported fuel or go bust. Poultry farmers say power outages are bad for their birds and their equipment.
As soon as the power goes out, the fan shuts down and the chickens won't have more than 15 to 30 minutes. As soon as the electricity comes back again, all your appliances get over or under voltage. So we need to replace it every year.
Despite the dire need, generators and solar systems are too expensive for most South Africans to go completely off-grid. Farmers are hoping nuclear power can help. An interest group made up of regional family farmers called the Southern African Agri-Initiative announced a strategic partnership this March with American investment firm C5 Capital to bring a new kind of small nuclear reactor to rural areas.
We can now deliver clean, sustainable energy to these farming communities by using a pebble bed modular nuclear reactor like the HTMR-100. It's extremely safe to operate. It is much cheaper and much smaller than any of the other conventional types of nuclear that we know.
Small modular pebble fuel reactors could allow farmers or other power users to become independent from government-supplied electricity. South African nuclear firm Stratec Global says its HTMR-100 reactor is relatively simple and easy to build.
We decided to develop a small modular reactor that did not need any water and could be taken to where you want the electricity, and it can have its own independent grid of 2 or 5 kilometers in diameter, or it can connect into a national grid.
South Africa was the global leader in pebble bed reactor technology, also known as PBMR, but froze development in 2010. Some South African researchers and engineers established Stratec Global and locally developed the helium gas-cooled pebble fuel reactor, the HTMR-100. South Africa was also the first to commercially manufacture the tennis ball-sized pebbles, enclosing tiny uranium granules that power pebble fuel reactors.
And so South Africa is an ideal country to partner with when it comes to the development of nuclear energy.
Despite the global push towards renewable energy, experts say these technologies can still not continuously power the world's electricity grids.
So that's why there is renewed interest in having nuclear power onto the grid.
Tech advisory firm Koya Capital announced a separate partnership with Stratec Global this April.
We also believe this technology is suitable for applications in Asia, Latin America, and even in traditional markets like Europe and the US, where there is demand for a medium-sized solution.
Stratec Global hopes to start building its first reactor later this year. Marise de Klerk for VOA News, Pretoria, South Africa.
It's time to hear what our listeners tell us about this program and the issues we cover in the news. We start with Balesh Joram in Zara County of Western Equatoria State, who writes, "Thank you, VOA South Sudan in Focus, and your colleagues. Surely the government of South Sudan has a lot of issues to address before elections. But for now, citizens are expecting their commitment to address the economy and the fight between the US dollar and the South Sudan pounds." Sabri Hamis Isaac in Yambio writes, "Hello, Tanza. The decision of the Minister of Justice to scrap the political party's registration fee, which was imposed by the Political Parties Council, is a good move. Things that are obstructing the rights of citizens must stop, and I encourage President Salva Kiir to keep people like the Minister of Justice close to him." Peter Majong Dul in Jonglei State writes, "Dear VOA, the statement made by the National Minister of Finance about civil servants' salary was heartbreaking and creates hopelessness in the country among civil servants who are surviving by the will of God." Matteo David writes, "A very good evening to you, Tanza. However much our government open up sustainable agricultural projects, when there are no road connectivities, the issue of insecurity in rural areas are not addressed, we the citizens will continue to suffer." James Majok Roy writes from Unity State, "Bantu, hi Nabil and Tanza. I'm sending my congratulatory message to the newly appointed governor of Unity State. He was appointed last week, and I am one of the Unity State citizens from my own county. I know you will deliver good services to the people of Unity State and durable peace and create room for peace with neighboring states Warap, Rumbek, including Rang administrative area. I feel like our appointment will also create more opportunities to Unity State young men and women, and I would like to have your cooperation with humanitarian partners to create resilience for our communities." Daniel Ariek Michael writes, VOA South Sudan in Focus, I'm in Yei. It's a good move so far taken by the government of South Sudan to involve the South Sudanese holdout groups for a peace agreement in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. This one alone sparked confidence among the people of South Sudan that at least there's going to be hope for peace in the youngest nation, so that citizens will live in diaspora and East Africa will come back to their motherland. And all thanks goes to the government of South Sudan in collaboration with the government of Kenya, IGAD, the African Union, and observers from the United States. A step taken for peace reign in South Sudan. A listener who calls himself Giniga Poyo writes, hello, John. I'm writing from Uganda. Joseph Ngeth is just a confused guy. We South Sudanese don't know about his party and the members. He is talking about in Juba. Where are they? That 5,000 people are nowhere to be seen. So he is not qualified for the peace talks. We don't need a bedroom party. Period. Just eat your food and sleep. Chok Tun Yok Kwai from Juba, South Sudan writes, to me, peace between holdout groups and the government of South Sudan will not bring peace to South Sudan, because 2018 peace agreement is not even implemented by the parties who signed the agreement. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the Voice of America or the views of South Sudan in Focus. Now, this week has been a very sad week for us. One of our avid listeners by name Edward Kasarani died in Kampala on Thursday. He has been very instrumental in helping us with the traditional music from South Sudan. May his soul rest in peace. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, May 24, 2024. We now leave you with some traditional Baka song from my village in Maridi. And this song was recorded courtesy of help from this, our listener, who passed away. I've been listening to a traditional Baka song from my village in Maridi County. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Nelson Lopez, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.